Session number 5868, part 58.
Your troubles in your own big wagon. Smile, smile, smile. While you've a Lucifer to light your fang. Smile, boys, that's the style. What's the use of worrying? It never was worthwhile. So, back up your troubles in
the First World War ended 60 years ago. But for those who are still alive and survived, the memories of that war will never die. Memories not only of the horror, but also of the good times. Horton Mundy lives in New Bradwell. Indeed, he has lived in New Bradwell all his life, leaving there to join up as a volunteer in the early days of the First World War. Returning home was one of the few who did survive. He has committed his memories of these times to tape, over 10 hours worth, which provide a fascinating insight into the life and thoughts of the ordinary soldier. We look back in horror now at the appalling loss of life and wonder just how men so willingly went to war. Didn't Horton Mundy ever have doubts?
No doubts, none whatever. In fact, it was so much so that you thought you was going on holiday. It seemed like going on a spree. Really? In fact, many of it, when you joined up at first, you had a thought, oh, we'll have to hurry up or else it'll be all over. Because at the back of your mind, you'd got the Boer War. Well, the Boer War, when they came home from that, you see, they was all heroes, and the youth at school in those days done nothing but history lessons. That was the main object. Well, to be a soldier, you became a massive hero, and that's why you went. You never give a thought. You joined, and that was that. You didn't have a doubt about why, or should you, or anything about it. All you wanted then was if you could get it, it's what they call a blighty, and get home, it was marvellous. But as to thinking, oh, we shouldn't have gone in, or why did we, or anything, never crossed a mind. It boiled right down to very little more than going to work in a factory. It was your job, and you took it for granted. But any fun you had, you enjoyed it. All sorts of bit of fun, sing-song and so forth, but you enjoyed that and you took it automatic. Now I've got old and I've come to the conclusion of all I went through from beginning to end, I've come to the decision there's no cowards and no heroes. And above all, you're not human beings. Now, I'll just give you a few quotations. Trench warfare at Plug Street Wood. Now, I can tell you this for true. Now, first I'll give you an idea. At night, you perhaps your trench is only 100 yards away at Plug Street Wood. You'd go out at night, a batch of you. A captain, a colonel, he'd send up, he'd say, I want a prisoner. There'd be a corporal, four or five or half a dozen men, be detailed to go across No Man's Land, grab a prisoner and bring him back. See? Yeah, well, now, if your luck was in, you'd get one. If your luck was out, you'd lose two or three men. Now then, here's your heroes. Come back, you brought a prisoner back. Week later, well, they used to say they come with the rations, medals. Week later, one of them men would have a medal, see? It all, nearly always the corporal, but one would be issued with a medal. Now, the other's done exactly the same as he did, you know, but he got a medal. The others didn't. And if it so happened, and it often did, that the chap with the medal, his uncle was Sergeant Major or something like that. Well, now that happened very often. Now they're heroes, see, according to the book.
Those branded as cowards and consequently court-martialed and shot included guards who fell asleep on duty, as well as those mentally disturbed by the effects of battle.
Now, another case, shelling. Perhaps he'd terrorised, he'd drop on the trench, he'd perhaps dive into a shell hole out of the way. If he were caught in that shell hole, not a shell hole, in the dugout at the back of the trench, if he was caught there by an officer while they were shelling, he should have been on the fire step, that certain firing squad. And what happened when they had a court-martial and were shot? The next of kin used to have a letter from the officer saying that he died fighting for his country, not a court-martial. And that's what happened all the time. Now, later, it'd be towards the end of 1915, during 1915, all the ambulance coaches was fitted out with a padded cell. Every ambulance coach had a padded cell fitted to it, because it became well known later in 1915. It got into the papers what was happening. So many men being shot for cowardice, and it wasn't cowardice. Simple things that the nerves went, and they were shot for it. Well, they fitted every coach up, every ambulance coach had a padded cell fitted to it. And I'll tell you for why, because when I came back out of the army, back to work, I worked on coach body work, and we stripped them all out and turned them into brake vans, and everyone had got a padded cell in it.
Horton Mundy survived the war, but was wounded three times, in 1915, in the Battle of the Somme in 1916, and again at the Second Battle of Arras, after which he was taken prisoner. The Second Battle of Arras, which Horton describes as a worse battle than the Somme, took place on the 3rd of May 1917. After the initial barrage, he had crossed no man's land and the first two lines of German trenches and was into open country.
Well, when the shelling stopped, barrages stopped, the smoke cleared, I had to dive quickly into a shell hole, because everything was so clear, sun was up, beautiful summer morning, May the 3rd. I dropped in this shell hole, I laid there for a time, and I thought, well, I'll have a look out. I did do. I looked straight in front towards the German side of the line, and it was a beautiful open country. I turned round later, after a little while, looked across no man's land, and that was a massacre. Bodies laying all over the place between the two lines, no man's land. We were simply mowed down. Later, clear morning, all quiet, quiet as a grave. Nothing at all happening. I had a look, I suddenly saw a German walking about. I took a steady aim, fetched him down, quietly. Later, the same thing happened again, but with a difference. Before I could get the rifle back in the shell hole, I was plastered with machine gun fire. I laid there a bit, I daredn't move. One of our chaps ran from another shell hole. He must have heard me firing, he must have been felt lonely, because there was no one about. Ran to me, but I shouted, it's no good, not room. But it's too late, he was hit. I pulled him in the trench with me, he was dead. Smothered with blood, his head poured of blood, I was soaked, my tunic. I pushed him up in front of me then to shield myself from German bullets. Well, that's a filthy trick, but you don't know what you're doing. You're not human at all. I lay still, I daredn't look for a long time. But when I did look, I had the shock of my life. Straight across, coming towards us from the German lines, there was no line to be noticed, coming towards us because it was a railway cutting where they were, coming from there in a long line, as far as you could see each way, simply walking, not running, nothing, just casually walking like a church parade. Well, I jumped out the shell hole and I ran like hell, quick as I could. I ran back, as soon as I started to run, I heard someone shouting, come in here, quick. I ran and jumped in the trench, and there was a few of our men. And actually, there was four British officers and three privates there. We hadn't been there all that long when one of our planes came over. He flew very, very low. Well, you could almost knock them plane down with a line prop then. They were so low, you could see the rings underneath, as plain as could be. And the blooming Germans never fired a shell at him. Now, there's a mystery. They just let him sail along. Well, because he was photographing, I suppose. But us chaps there, us little bunch, we waved our handkerchiefs at him and, well, he must have saw us. But later, then it happened. It was all quiet. Couldn't hear a sound, and suddenly there was a hell of a roar. All their guns, they were stood wheel to wheel along that Harris front before the battle, and there was 120,000 of us in that, six divisions. Well, there was a hell of a roar, and the dirt and shells flew everywhere. Well, we laid at the bottom as low as we could get in this trench. Well, this kid, as I'd palled with just for a few minutes, we laid with our heads together, and the others laid along tight at the bottom, and every little way you could hear a tremendous roar of a shell, which was one of those old-fashioned garrison guns, naval guns.
Flash, here comes a whiz bang. Now you soldier men, get down those stairs, down in your dugouts and say your prayers. Hush. Here comes a whiz back and it's making straight for you. And you'll see all the wonders of no man's land if a whiz bang hits you. Hush! Here comes a whiz bang! Hush! Here comes a whiz bang!
Now but eventually it had to happen. There was one crash. Well, I said then, or afterwards, that was the last shell they fired, but because it wasn't. The next thing I knew following that, I found myself flat out, and I stretched my arms, smothered with dirt and rubble. I stretched my arms, they was on, they was all right. I stretched my legs, they was all right. My foot hurt, but my legs was all right, and I brushed the dirt off my head, put my hand under my face, that was sore. I pulled it out, my hand was full of blood. That's where the concussion, I expect, the shell bursting made me nose bleed. That was all. And I hit this kiddie next to me on the arm. I said, are you all right? He didn't answer. I said, are you all right? He didn't answer. So I brushed the dirt off of him, off his head, and he'd got a bit of shell clean through the top of his helmet, and it was sticking out under his chin. Now, my head wasn't 6 inches away from that, so you can tell that's a marvellous look. Well, when I stood up, I got to my feet, and there was three of them, hadn't been touched. That was marvellous. And the other fourth officer lay next to where this chap was, my mate as I call him. He laid there, and the other two laid further along, and I don't know how long these officers had been talking or how long I'd been knocked out, but anyway, one of the officers, I should say, must have been one of the senior officers, because he said, I'm going to give myself up and get stretcher bearers, German stretcher bearers. Well, the second officer, he said, I'll come with you. And the third officer, he says, yes, he said, I'll come. I thought, blimey. And he left me on my feet. So I said, if you're going, I'll come as well. So this third officer, he turned to me and he said, you stay here and bind the wounded up. I said, I don't know anything about ambulance work. I didn't. So I don't know anything about it. I said, not only that, if you're getting German stretcher bearers, well, they're the people that handle it. And he flew in a hell of a temper. He drew his revolver out. He rubbed the muzzle along my forehead. He said, you attempt to follow me, he said, and I'll blow your brains out. I thought, blimey, it's my lucky day. Now, what actually happened then, within a few minutes, the number one officer, I thought he were a brave chap, but still, you don't know. No one's brave and no one's a coward in a war, you're all the same. This first officer climbed up, walked away, second climbed up, followed. Third one climbed up and followed, and I waited perhaps 30 or 40 seconds. It's up to judge now, all those years, over 60 years ago. As far as I remember, it might have been half a minute. And then I heard a roar, a tat-tat-tat-tat, machine gun. Well, I thought, oh, hell. So I climbed up after a little while and peeked over where the front of the trench had been blew in. They all three lay dead there. Well, now this, I crawled back in the trench again, and this officer that laid there wounded, he turned to me, he said, they're dead, ain't they? I said, yes, yes, they're all dead. So I said, well, I don't know anything about ambulance work, I said, but I'll do what I can. I'll bandage you up as well as I can, but I don't understand it. Now, that first officer, he got a smashed leg. Lump of shell had busted his leg up. He'd got a wrist, a piece had smashed his wrist, and there was a bit of shrapnel just stuck through the top of his nose. Now that was the first one I looked at. The next one I looked at, he laid there and he'd got a busted leg, smashed, all terrible smash on one leg. That was his. Third one, I never saw anything like it in my life. His legs, as though they'd been cut through above the knee, up the thigh, and blew the other way round, twisted round both legs. Well, the first officer I bandaged up and put him as well as I could. I pulled a bit of shrapnel out the top of his nose. The other chap, I said to him, shall I bandage your leg, kid? He said, no, I'll do it myself. Now, the third chap, I said to him, can I have a... He said, don't interfere. He said, you just make me comfortable. So I propped him up on the fire step, propped him up there, comfortable, made him comfortable. Well, and during the day, as the day wore on, no one spoke at all. Now, that's marvellous, isn't it? You never heard one of them as busted up as they was. You didn't hear one of them say, well, kid, they don't half hurt, nothing. Not a murmur of complaint. Now, during the afternoon, getting on into the afternoon, there was this chap with his legs, I could see he was looking a bit groggy, you know. He said to the officer, give me your revolver, lend me your revolver. So the officer called me to him and says, here, gave me his revolver, he said, no, throw that away. So I threw his revolver over the top of the trench, out the way, because it was obvious he knew, he thought, well, if I should pass out, he might crawl and get it. He wanted to shoot himself, naturally, that was what he wanted it for. But that went off, and I lit several fags for him, and he said then, when I lit a fag the last time, he got his tin, I put a fag in his mouth, I lit it, and he says, kid, if you get out of this, he said, tell me mother, won't you? I says, yes, I'll tell her, but I couldn't, I didn't know who he was. But he gave me his tin of fags, he says, here, he said, now you take these, he said, I don't want them, you have them. Well, I lit his fag, it hung loose in his mouth. It suddenly fell out of his mouth, and all he said was, oh, God, help me. And his head fell on one side, and that was the end of him.
Wait for me, for I love you.
Horton Mundy was later captured by the Germans and taken prisoner. He suffered many ups and downs. The war has remained vivid in his memory and have contained many good times as well as bad times. But when he looks back, does Horton Mundy believe it was all worth it?
No, I don't. I don't think any war is worth it. And as I've said on other tapes, I don't believe it should ever happen or ever should again. And I gave you reasons for that, because when I quoted the all our dead chaps lying in no man's land, I related all that before, but it never should have happened, and it's not right. And old hands now, all those that went through that war, they'd tell you the same. It's a waste of life. Young chaps cut down there and in the prime of their life.
Parades on Sunday.